Accession number 19771, Reel 2.
Done, Reel 2.
Yes, it was not a nice experience that the enemy were so close before you could beat him off, if I can use that, a rather crude expression. We'd been trained to use our rifles, and obviously we had trained to use our grenades, but they were so short a distance away that I hardly know how to put this. It was so surprising that they were so close before we could retaliate. But that was a feature of all the fighting on the Shenan Saddle, that whilst I was there, until I was wounded, that the Japanese used to attack by night and sleep by day. And sometimes I think we had shortcomings in the fact that it was not fully recognized that was the way the Japs conducted their attacks. I haven't put that very good, but as far as my feelings, this is the original question was concerned about my initial feelings. That is how I could, the only way I can describe them.
Why did they get so close before they were detected?
Because we had nothing in front to give us any warning. As I said, no barbed wire, no landmines. On occasions, there were trip grenades rigged up. That is a four-second grenade. The pin removed and placed in, for example, a coca tin with a trip wire attached to a stake. And anybody walking along, if they trip the wire, they'd pull the grenade out of the coca tin, for example, and the grenade would explode. That would give warning that that something was happening out there. But in some positions, we did not even have these trip grenades. So consequently, the Japanese had very soft type shoes. They only had, if I remember correctly, they just had one part of the shoe for their big toe, and their other toes were encompassed within the rest of the shoe. And they were very soft shoes. They were not so heavy as our ammunition boots, and consequently they could approach very, very softly without being detected. So that's the reason that we were surprised that they had got so close before that we were aware that there was an attack going on.
So, when they got so close, what form did the fighting take? Hand to hand?
On occasions, but invariably, if I can give you an example, that in one night attack, the Japanese troops must have got within, 10 yards of our bunker. And that during the night hours, there was, in my bunker, for example, there were three riflemen, including myself. There was always one man awake. The other two tried to get some rest in the bunker. And suddenly I woke up to a shout and firing, and the man in the bunker was shouting and firing his rifle. The other two of us jumped up, and we got our grenades out, and I happened to be the bomber. Now, the bomber carried 6 7-second grenades, and he used his rifle, which was a Lee Enfield specially bound, EW rifle it was called, as similar to a mortar. Well, I had these 6 7-second grenades. I got those out, and the other lads got out their 2 4-second grenades. We then carried on firing. I also got out my phosphorus grenade, a very nasty grenade, incidentally. I got out my phosphorus grenade, and the firing then had been taken up by the Brens, the light machine guns, and at that time, I believe it was the Tommy guns that we'd had, before they withdrew the Tommy guns for the to be replaced by the Sten guns. And then the mortars opened up, the rear mortars, the 3-inch mortars, and that it was at that point that the bunker I was in completely exploded. The bunkers were a hole in the ground, and we roofed them over with timber and earth over the top to prevent shrapnel. I don't know to this day whether it was friendly fire or not, but the bunker exploded. The other two men were very, very badly wounded. Our rifles were at the bottom of the bunker with all the earth and timber on top of them. I dug to get out the rifles. The other two men, they couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't find the rifles, and the firing was still going on. And that I didn't know whether the Japanese... The firing did eventually stop. And I didn't know whether the Japanese had taken the position or whether we held it. It was a long night.
Was that also at Crete East?
Yeah.
So, you've got this position called Crete East. Does that mean to say that there were other Cretes?
Yes, there must have been a Crete West. I never served on it. But the most prominent feature on the Shenan Saddle was Nippon Hill. I don't know the height of the peak, but it was a very, very high peak. That was the dominant feature. It was held by the Frontier Force rifles. The Frontier Force rifles were overran by the Japanese, and there was a counterattack put in by, I believe, the Frontier Force rifles and then the Gurkhas, and then by the Debs. The Debs managed to take the position with heavy casualties, particularly amongst the officers. And then later, the Japanese retook the position again, not from the Debs, but from whoever relieved the Debs, which I think was the Frontier Force rifles. As a matter of fact, my company was sent up as a reinforcement to the Frontier Force rifles on Nippon Hill. We ascended in single file up Nippon Hill, expecting to relieve the Frontier Force rifles. We went up in single file. We had all our equipment, but we were not in fighting order. Our rifles were slung, the mortars carried, the Brens carried, and that we had in no way in fighting, in no way in what I would describe as fighting order. When we reached near the top of the hill, I was in the first half dozen, I looked over and I was absolutely amazed to see that a Japanese soldier looking at me. The commanding officer must also have seen this, realised what the position was, and ordered us to get off of Nippon Hill. As I stated, we were in no position to attack, that we had our weapons and that. I think the Japanese must have been asleep, because I think we must have been halfway down Nippon Hill before a shot was fired. When we reached the bottom of Nippon Hill, that a runner came from headquarters, and his words to the commanding officer was to get the hell out of it, because the hurry bombers were coming in to strafe it. The Japanese had taken the position, which we were unaware of. So that's one of these odd stories of the war, that the Japanese had retaken, we were sent there to relieve, and the we were unaware that the Japanese had retaken the position. So we went up there in marching order rather than in fighting order.
Which company were you in?
I'm not sure. I was in so many companies, I can't remember which company. I'm sorry about that.
Did you find much difference between 1st Devons and 11th Devons?
Oh, the 1st Battalion of the Devons were regular soldiers in the main. And that they were good soldiers, well-disciplined soldiers. Their officers, not as I'm criticising any other soldier or officer, but their officers were good officers. Very good officers, very brave men.
What does EW mean?
The pun?
What does EW mean?
That's a word I use in respect of the rifle. I apologise, I don't really know what it means. That we were told it was an EW rifle. It was a Lee Enfield, as I stated, bound with copper. Instead, you inserted a ballistite cartridge. You then had a discharger cup which fitted on the barrel of the Lee Enfield and clamped on it. Into this discharger cup, you put a 7-second grenade, having taken out the pin. You then placed the rifle on the ground with the trigger towards you. And what happened then is you directed it towards the enemy, and it acted like a mortar. You then pressed the trigger, the ballistite cartridge projected the grenade, which left the rifle like a mortar bomb with a left a 2-inch mortar, and then from the trajectory it would come down on the enemy. And it was not very accurate, but could be quite effective. You could get a greater distance than you could throw a grenade.
What kind of cartridge did you say?
Ballistite. Ballistite cartridge. It was just a cartridge with a powder that acted as a propellant without having a bullet in it.
So, you said your first experience of the Japanese night attack on Crete East you've described. Do you know when this was about?
I would think it was during... It would be. It would have been in March. March 44. It would have been summer, I would think, round about March the 27th, 28th, because I celebrated my 21st birthday on March the 12th, and I know it was after that date.
What was your opinion then of the Japanese enemy?
They were good soldiers. They were fanatical soldiers, but certainly they not only were they fanatical, but as I stated, that perhaps their fanaticism made them even stronger as soldiers. They were barbaric to the extreme. But one cannot take anything from them as far as their courage was concerned, because they just threw themselves into attack regardless of the casualties they were taken. So overall, outside their barbarism, and there was real barbarism, their bravery as such could not be bettered. As I was saying just now, that on this particular night attack on Crete East, that I had to take the decision with the two wounded men there, not knowing if we still held the position, of what to do when the dawn come. If the Japanese had taken the position, I was faced with the choice of staying there, and I know what would happen. That undoubtedly they would, they did bayonet the wounded. And I had to take the decision whether I should stay there or whether that I should try and get off the cud, as we called the hill. Better be shot in the back rather than, to be bayoneted. To be bayoneted must be the most painful death. And fortuitously, it was resolved in the morning we'd held the position.
Were you injured yourself?
I only had slight grazes across my forehead. It was the other two men who were badly wounded, and my best friends were in the next bunker, and that one was killed and the other so severely wounded that he was eventually discharged from service.
So that was your first experience of
service? That was my very first experience of action.
What condition were you in after that?
I think, having experienced it, I was more ready to expect what I was more aware of what to expect in another attack, and I took part in, there were other attacks, but perhaps initially I was ill prepared for the ferocity of the Japanese attack. On the subsequent attacks, I was greater prepared for what was going to happen. But on this position, as an aside, also on this position, at a later date, the Japanese had got up 3 light tanks, and they were between Nippon Hill and Crete East. And the commanding officer of the company came to me and said, you can use a Piat. Now, a Piat was a projector infantry anti-tank. And it was an anti-tank weapon used by the infantry. Terrible weapon. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, take the Piat and 3 bombs. We called them bombs. Today, I think they call them projectiles. And see if you can get those Japanese tanks. As I said, the Piat, it was on a spring. It was spring-loaded. If it did not recock itself, which invariably it did not, to recock it, you had to put the butt under your feet, pull it up on the spring, turn it, and lock it, and then it was ready to fire again. But to the point, I left the position and went down the front of the Cud, facing Nippon Hill, and I crawled over what would have been our forward positions. We used to dig in an all-round defence. And there wasn't a single person left alive there. And projecting from the ground was another Piat. So I went down over the Cud towards the tanks, which I couldn't pick out. I went down over, and it with the Piat and 3 bombs. And there was no cover. There were no falls on the ground. There were no trees. And obviously, there was no covering fire as far as our position was concerned. And as I went down over, that I think again the Japs on Nippon Hill must have been asleep, but a rifle opened up. And so I continued down the hill, and then the heavy stuff started to come in machine guns. And I realised that I wasn't going to get within 100 yards, wasn't going to get within 500 yards, and the effective range of the Piat was only 100 yards. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to make it. I'll go back and report. So I went back the way I had come and reported to the company commander. And the company commander suggested that what I should do is go down to the Palel Tamu Road and try and approach these tanks from the flank. But before I could leave the position, I don't know whether I had disturbed the Japs or what, if they wondered what the heck was going on, but they launched a heavy mortar bombardment on us, and I couldn't get out of the position, and the commanding officer rescinded the order. So I never got the tanks. These are one of the things that happened in war, I suppose.
Had he sent you off by yourself?
On my own, yeah.
And do you think the Japanese had spotted you?
I'm sure. Well, the sentry, I'm sure, would have picked me up, because that was the first shot that was fired.
How frightening was that?
I didn't find being under fire was frightening. Especially from just rifle fire, as the heavier stuff starts to come in, the machine guns, then you wonder about your chances. I haven't been under fire before. It's there I weighed up my chances, and my chances were of getting close to the tanks were absolutely nil.
How much use did the enemy make of these tanks?
As I say, as far as our positions, and we used to dig in all round defence, as far as our positions facing Nippon Hill were concerned, those tanks had levelled the bunkers to the ground. There was just a debris. There wasn't a single person alive. And I know that they sent for a tank officer, and a tank officer came up. And I will believe him, because of the terrain, he said that they couldn't get any British tanks up to us.
So how had the Japanese got them up?
They had brought them up the Palautamu Road.
So that incident came soon after the Japanese night attack that you described?
Oh, yes. They all came very close together. It was night attack after night attack that came in. The main thrust of the Japanese was up the Palautamu Road. This is their main thrust. As far as Kohima was concerned, and I'm filled with admiration for the lads who fought at Kohima, but that was intended to be the roadblock between our supply base at Dimapur and Imphal. But the main thrust of the Japanese army, I think it was the 33rd Army, was up that Palautamu Road. To continue their advance, they had to take the Shenan saddle, where the promontories were, where the hills were, which we occupied. Without that, they could not continue their advance towards Imphal up that road.
You said that this first experience of a night attack prepared you mm-hmm. for later ones. Do you mean mentally prepared you, or in terms of techniques
mentally,
which you could use?
Mentally, I think. Mentally, you know. That with the army training, you shoot at targets, and nobody shoots back at you.
What do you remember happening next?
On this position, we repelled a great many attacks, and then the order was given. The commanding officer, on this position, incidentally, I forgot that. We were given the order to fight to the last man, the last round. And I well remember a major from battalion headquarters giving such an order. And we repelled another Japanese night attack. And the commanding officer, we were very much down in strength, very much depleted in strength, decided what I thought was contrary to orders. I'm thankful that he did give the order. He gave the order for what was left of us to evacuate the position, which we did. And we evacuated the position and retired to the next position, which I can't remember the name of it. It was the last hill on the east side of the road before the continuation of Shenan Saddle on the west side of the road. But I do forget its name. But in any case, we retreated to that position, which was also held by another company of the Devons. That's another incident that happened on that particular feature of Crete East. Whilst on this next position, again, the Japanese came in on night attacks, and that it's high on this position, on this particular occasion, was to the rear of the defence. All-round defence, with eyes like to the rear, not facing Crete East. And the Japanese came in from the direction of Crete East, and the lads were getting overwhelmed by the Japanese as they came in, and therefore we were ordered to leave our positions and to go forward to help the lads who were getting overrun at the front of the position. It's whilst I was going forward that I'm not certain whether it was a grenade or whether it was a mortar bomb. It hit myself and it hit another member, and that we were given first aid, and then we were left, the two of us, and neither of us could use a rifle. The two of us were left to the rear of the position while the rest of the lads went forward to reinforce against the Japanese attack. And whilst on this position, as I say, the two of us just left at the rear. We didn't know if the Japs were going to come in from the rear, but we decided we'd get our grenades and hope for the best. And it, we heard footsteps coming up the cud, and we thought, well, here they come. But as that transpired, a voice shouted out, "We're the Devons." And it was further reinforcements coming up the rear from and from the battalion headquarters. And the following day, they got the wounded out by jeep with stretchers and took us to Imphal, to the forward hospitals. And about 3 or 4 days later, they flew us out by Dakotas. The Dakotas were bringing in the reinforcements, and they were also bringing in supplies and flying out the wounded. They flew us to Camilla in the Arakan, and from there by hospital ship to Madras, and by hospital train to the base hospital at Pune. And there lies an interesting story, because when I was in hospital at Pune, there was a position known as Lynch's Pimple. And in the bed next to me was the sole survivor of a platoon of the Devons that held Lynch's Pimple. And it, what had happened to him is the Japanese had overrun the position, and as usual, they bayoneted all the wounded. And this particular man had feigned death. And he had a presentation watch, and he feigned death so successfully that they took his presentation watch, and then along with the rest of the dead, they threw them over the cud. And he was found about 2 days later by a Gurkha patrol. But to the point of the story, he was not so much concerned that he was the sole survivors, but the little so-and-sos had pinched his presentation watch. It seemed amazing to me. It wasn't so... The only his basic was concerned they had stolen his presentation watch.
What unit was he from?
He was from the 1st Devons.
What had he been presented the watch for?
I'm not certain what he'd been presented it for. I believe it was a gold watch, so it must have been a great sentimental value to him. I can remember his name, Harry Taylor.
And what wounds did you have?
Through the arm, through my right arm, they took that piece out, and through my right thigh, and they didn't...